Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm your host, Eric Walenza, CEO of IoT1, the consultancy that helps companies create value from data to accelerate growth. And our guest today is Roy Dagan, CEO of SecureThings. SecureThings provides real-time security and operational efficiency to improve system availability, organizational compliance, and cybersecurity. In this talk, we discuss the challenges companies face in monitoring large fleets of IoT devices, from maintaining firmware updates to simply maintaining a unified log across departments. We also explored the increasing importance of automation and managing systems that are growing too complex for any team of people to comprehend in full. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a five-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you'd like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you. Roy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Absolutely, Eric. Thanks for inviting me to be here.
Great. So we have a very significant topic to discuss, which is the topic of securing IoT devices, and then more generally, the topic of understanding the devices, understanding their performance. But before we get into the topic, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you. So I think you're coming from Israel, which has, I would say, quite a reputation in the device security space. I was just looking at the R&D figures coming out of Israel, and it's like twice as much R&D per GDP than just about any other country in the world. So a well-deserved reputation. But when did you personally first touch on this topic of IoT devices or basically monitoring data coming out of physical things?
So it started a few years ago. So a background, actually, both my co-founder and myself actually came from more of the traditional cybersecurity space, intelligence space, risk management. And we worked for RSA and other companies before we started our journey and before we started SecureThings. And then, when after working for corporates and startups and being around and doing a bunch of things, by the way, my co-founder was always about more of the technology and he was a developer, an architect, the team lead. I was always a product manager and managed teams of product managers. Then, we just decided to focus on IoT and IoT cybersecurity. So that's kind of where we initially started the SecureThings journey. And we just started looking into it and, exploring the challenges and seeing what's out there in the field, manufacturers, enterprises, system integrators, and all that. And that was really kind of the beginning of our journey.
Yeah, no, actually, we set up IoT1 in the same year in 2015. And it'd be interesting to hear kind of how you saw the market at that time. But our perspective, being based here in China, was, and of the question is, what is IoT, right? So everybody, all the traditional companies, this was very much kind of IoT 101 year. And then it's very quickly matured, the general understanding of what we're trying to accomplish here, what the challenges are and so forth. But when you first set the company up, it sounded like you were also kind of exploring the market. How long did it take for you to start to crystallize the kind of the problems that you wanted to focus on solving?
Yeah, so that's really true how you said it. IoT is, it's like saying internet, mobile. It's just big. It has so many use cases, so many types of devices. It's pretty much kind of everything. So initially, we're trying to understand, trying to kind of, classify, categorize different areas of IoT. We were trying to work with manufacturers at the beginning with, again, the offering of cybersecurity for manufacturers. And as you said, it was kind of in the early days of IoT. So obviously, IoT started way before that, but more of the topic of securing devices and all that and the risk started around those years. But then over time, what we saw is that definitely IoT cybersecurity was interesting and we were having conversations with manufacturers, but we decided to really go to where the demand is. So where the devices are actually used, where the devices are actually deployed, that can be on the consumer space. But where we actually decided to really go into is more of the commercial, the enterprise space. And that's where we really kind of found, you know, the product market fit and the so acute need, because these enterprises, corporate organizations have so many devices scattered all over the places, all over the place, all over different sites. And, you know, whether if it's a financial institution, you know, a technology company, university, hospital, you name it, they just have so many devices. And when we started exploring that specific area, that's where we find, you know, we found our product market fit and understood, okay, this is what the market needs and this is what we're going to be focusing on.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, there's been a lot of press around how easy it is to hack things like baby monitors, and you know, that's kind of a scary case. But the reality is that it's really hard to get consumers excited enough about security to pay more. But with enterprises, right, this is always a top priority. Where are we today in our ability to kind of understand? I mean, I guess it's not just kind of blocking people from hacking, but I guess it's understanding the device well enough to know, is it performing as it's supposed to be performing? Where are we today in our ability to do that?
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. When we started speaking with the enterprises, we saw that, you know, securing the devices is one piece of the puzzle. But even knowing, as you said, if the devices are working, maintaining them is another piece. To your question where we are today, it's still a journey, right? We talk about the journey to full automation in this space. Today, when you look at the enterprises, the organizations, it's a lot of manual work. It's in some cases very reactive. There was just the case, you know, the shooting in Brooklyn a couple of months ago, where the MTA looked at the footage and they found out that a few of the cameras weren't working in some of the stations where the shooting took place. But that just tells you how it is. It's just like that, pretty much across the board. Across different types of organizations, there is a lack of capabilities to know if the devices are secure. But even more than that, even to know if the devices are working and operating when you expect them to work. Because obviously, you know, organizations are paying every year anything from hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions of dollars to place these devices out there, whether if it's, you know, video surveillance devices, access control, intrusion detection systems, different types of devices if we talk about physical security. But then there's also building management and other types of devices, and really a lot of money being spent. But then when you expect it to work, in many cases you find out it's actually, it hasn't been working for a while, and you just found out because now is the point of time where you actually need that system to work, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, and that's, I mean, that's an interesting example. I guess one of the issues with things like security cameras is that these cameras could have been deployed 15 years ago. And I guess if you're putting technology in the field today, it's more likely to be kind of have a proper protocol and really be quote unquote IoT device. But there's a lot of stuff that's collecting data and being integrated into systems that was put in the field, you know, a decade or two ago. And it has a completely different architecture that's much more difficult to manage with modern systems. How do you define the scope of, you know, of your business? Do you try to touch these, you know, these legacy assets as well, or do you try to more narrowly define your scope around the more, you know, modern devices that kind of fit better into this kind of IoT archetype?
So we're more focused on modern, you know, IP enabled devices, which are, you know, running on various networks. We're not going really focusing on the legacy types of devices. And what you'll see is within the organization, there's a lot of, you know, the devices are the modern type of devices, again, IP-based, connected to the networks. But what you find out is that they are IP-based, they are IP-enabled, they have been, you know, manufactured in the last few years, but they're lacking capabilities to kind of make them, you know, really enterprise-ready. They are performing really well. They're actually devices that do amazing stuff. You know, whether if it's your panel with access controls and card readers and all that, or whether if it's your camera with amazing lenses, really fantastic types of capabilities. But then when it meets the enterprise, it's sometimes it's either lacking capabilities or it's really hard to perform some of the stuff that in the IT side of the house is so trivial. Right, it's so trivial that in the IT side, you can monitor, you can maintain, you can upgrade any type of standard IT device, right? And it's been that way for years. And there's so many different types of tools which enable you to do that. And the IT teams really have a vast array of tools that they can select for different challenges. But then when you look at an enterprise and you look more of the IoT operational side of the house, then you see that it's kind of underserved in terms of the capabilities that they have for solving the challenges, which are also a bit unique in this case.
Yeah. So if you break down what, you know, how does an IoT device differ from a traditional IT system? What are the big parameters you're looking at? I mean, obviously there's much lower compute power. Maybe there's a higher diversity of types of, you know, devices versus traditional systems. But what, how do you look at the differences that are, you know, important for understanding how you need to do your job of managing these devices?
So yeah, so definitely variance is a, you know, is a problem, but then also the due dispersity of these devices, right? So comparing to standard IT devices, in this case, you have devices which are out there in the field, you know, whether if it's street corners or different buildings and pretty much all over the place, and you have different vendors. So one organization can have can use devices from many different vendors and have many different models of these different vendors, and then also have different firmware versions of these different models on of these different vendors. And it's very hard to track what you have. But then another piece of this is also the kind of part of it is kind of the ecosystem, or let's say how IoT devices are deployed. So if you think about it within a standard IT environment, any IT device, you know, there's the manufacturer, then the device goes to IT, and then it's commissioned to someone within the organization, right? An employee or team within the organization. When it comes to IoT devices, typically what you have is the manufacturer, you have a distributor, you have a system integrator, and then it hits the network. And in many cases, organizations may have even more than one system integrator, or even in some cases, the system integrators may outsource it to third parties. And you find out that there's a situation there are multiple hands touching these devices, placing them in different segments, different areas of the organization. In most cases, there's a lack of standardization. Again, because there's so many hands touching them, and you'll see that it's just configured differently from a security perspective, from an operational perspective. And that's part of the challenge. And that's, I think, part of the reason why it's so different from the standard IT devices. Again, even just because of the nature of how these devices are deployed and who is responsible for deploying them, and whether they go through IT or they don't really go through IT.
So tell me then about your value proposition here. I thought it was interesting. We were chatting before starting the show here that you started with cybersecurity, but have now also started covering other topics related to monitoring device performance, like predictive maintenance. Because I, you know, in the podcast here, I talk to cybersecurity companies and I talk to predictive maintenance companies, and usually they're quite distinct. But there is kind of, as I think about it, a very clear thread linking them. But how did it come to you to kind of blend these different use cases into a business?
So earlier on, as we were speaking with customers, with prospects, we kind of identified that there are teams within organizations which are underserved. It's not your typical IT or security team within the organization. It's the teams which are responsible for these operational technologies. For example, physical security or for building management technologies. They're responsible for making sure that the device is always up, running, available, whenever the organization needs them. They're responsible for making sure that they have the right devices, that the devices are there on time, working with the SIs, and so on. And what we saw is that these teams are, again, kind of underserved. Nobody has ever built them the proper IT system that they've been dreaming of. So while the IT side of the house has, you know, again, many types of systems that they can work with, these operational teams are really lacking that kind of you know, comparison of an IT system for managing these devices. And that's when we had earlier on, we had the foundation of the cybersecurity. So it was a really nice stack in terms of the underlying technology. But what we decided to do is also expand the capabilities to also cover the more of the operational things which are needed. So whether if it's around maintenance of devices, whether if it's around compliance, and things of that nature. And then by the way, we also decided, oh, hey, this is actually a new category. This is IoT ops. And this is really what the market needs, the notion of IoT operations or a system for that.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, IoT ops, makes sense, right? I mean, you have this kind of mature systems for our more legacy infrastructure, and we're getting to the point where we have enough IoT infrastructure in the field, certainly, that we have to really start thinking about how to manage it. If we look then at the industries, I mean, I guess this is, on the one hand, it's a very horizontal challenge, but to some extent, you also have to pick your battles. What are the industries that you have decided to focus on in the early years of the business?
So in terms of, you know, when we look at it from a perspective of end customers, our focus is on the teams which at the moment are responsible for physical security technologies. Over time, we will expand to additional operational teams within the enterprise. It's already starting to happen. And then when we look at different types of verticals or industries, then we're seeing demand pretty much across the board, whether if it's tech companies or universities, higher education, healthcare, so different types of healthcare organizations, hospitals, and so on. But then it's broader than that. It's really from oil and gas to the retailers, to pretty much every industry you can think of, which has, you know, a large footprint of devices, has a problem to manage these devices today. We are, you know, in some cases focusing on specific industries, but the challenge is, you know, it's across the board. In some cases, you'll see it, you know, the blend is maybe a bit more around maintenance. It may be more around, you know, the availability of devices. It may be more around compliance or cybersecurity, but it still exists in each one of these industries. There's pretty much no organization that has an easy time dealing with these devices today the way it is.
Yeah, no, that's certainly the case. And are you typically selling directly to the, let's say, the operator, or are you kind of integrating through existing solutions that the operator is purchasing or with system integrators? How do you go to market?
Yeah, so we work with end customers, but typically we work via system integrator partners. So we work closely with different system integrators because there's also value in the solution for them. So they can provide better service to the end customers and know what's going on within the end customer environment. So again, they can basically just provide them better service and better value. So we are more in a channel model, but we are also, at the same time, we also work closely with the end customer. So we have a customer success team, which is really responsible to make sure that our customers and our partners at the same time are always happy, you know, with the systems, with the capabilities, using everything, you know, to the best the system can provide them and the best service that we can provide them.
And then if we look at it from, you know, one other perspective, which would be the perspective of scale, are you focused more on, let's say, the larger multinationals, or do you see a lot of demand from medium-sized companies? Are smaller companies also beginning to invest in this, or is there a certain threshold where it's maybe too difficult for management to take on the task, or maybe they just don't prioritize security kind of at a certain enterprise size? Where have you found there to be the most demand?
So again, I actually say the demand is across the board, because what you'll see is the, you know, there's kind of a correlation between number of devices and how big the challenge is, but also the size of the teams. So in large organizations, you typically have bigger teams, which are supposed to manage these devices, but the number of devices are so big that even it doesn't matter how many people you throw in this challenge, they can't do it all manually and, again, all reactively. Same goes to the medium-sized organization. They may have a team of, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 people, you know, responsible for these devices. But again, the devices are scattered all over the place. There are large numbers. And again, it's hard. When you get to the smaller organizations, they typically, you know, sometimes there isn't really a team. There may be one person which is responsible for many different tasks within the organization. And that person is also kind of the liaison to the system integrator or to the service provider, in which case, you know, the service provider may be providing them the service themselves. So it's pretty much across the board because of the correlation between the number of devices and how big the challenge is, and the fact that, again, it doesn't matter how many people you throw in it. It's just it won't be enough.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it. Then if we look at your solution, what are you providing? I guess this is, do you kind of frame this as a device management platform, or how would you typically communicate your offering to your customers?
Yeah, so basically the solution helps them automate all the operations of their connected devices. In terms of the category, we categorize it as IoT ops. What the solution helps them do is from the level of monitoring the devices. So at each point of time, they can know from data that which is we collect from the devices, they can know what's happening with their devices, to the level of managing the devices, and they can know exactly across the board which firmware versions they have, when have passwords been rotated, what are the status of certificates, to the level of then, automation and protection. So where they can, a click of a button, they can restart devices if there is any issues. And, not just one, obviously, they can do on like 500 devices in a click of a button. They can rotate passwords, they can upgrade firmwares, they can manage certificates, but they can do pretty much everything they want. And the beauty is that it's all in one consolidated platform. So at the end of the day, what they get is one dashboard, and it's kind of the first time that they're seeing all their devices, across, it can be across the city, it can be across the country, it can be across the globe. And they're seeing for the first time all the devices in one single pane of glass, but in the same system, they're also seeing the alerts in real time. They're seeing what's working, what's not. And also from the same dashboard, obviously, they can also perform the automation. So if they see that something is not working, with a click of a button, they can fix it. And then the system also includes the concepts of collaboration. So we have various integrations with third-party systems like ServiceNow. So from security things, they can also send automatically an alert to another team within the organization. It can be, the network team, it can be the cybersecurity team, it can be different teams within the organization with which they can collaborate to solve the issues in a more timely fashion.
Okay, interesting. So what does this look like from a tech stack perspective? Because I think it's a non-trivial problem to kind of get all the devices integrated to the extent that you can roll out firmware updates and control devices, turn them on and off and so forth. I guess collecting the data is maybe a little bit easier, but still non-trivial. But what does it look like from a tech stack perspective and then from a kind of assessment rollout perspective at a customer?
So yeah, it's a pretty broad and interesting stack from capabilities on the edge devices, whether running on the edge devices themselves, deployed, or whether it's collecting information from the edge devices, to integrations with various third-party systems from different manufacturers. And whenever we come out to a customer, we already have the nice thing is that we already have those integrations already created. So the deployment, I'll talk in a minute about the deployment, but it helps us make the deployment really straightforward. That includes all kind of stream processing and analytical capabilities, and where we use where we have the risk detection models and the predictive maintenance models, and we can automatically trigger what we call the smart alerts, and the customers can act upon them. Obviously, it's all presented in the dashboard, which is pretty slick. We are spending a lot of time on the design of pretty much every single screen in the dashboard because we're helping these the customers, the teams, really get to where we believe they should be now. And that also includes the slick dashboard and everything that we can provide there. And then also additional integrations with the third-party systems. When we deploy, to answer the second part of the question, when we deploy, everything we built in the last few years is really to enable a quick and simple deployment within the enterprise. So from a customer's perspective, it's a software-only solution. So all they need to do is pretty much spin up a VM. We deploy the capabilities on that VM, connect back to our system, and then everything automatically starts appearing. So there's not much configuration from a customer standpoint. It all just kind of magically happens based on all the integrations that we have already in the system.
Okay, so interesting. Let's dig into that integration topic a little bit more. So you said you basically have a large library of integrations that you've built kind of in advance. But the IoT space is vast. So how does that work? You just start prioritizing the OEMs and then kind of systematically going through and integrating? Or I guess you do this every time you do a new project, you're starting to integrate. But how have you approached that? Because it's, it's a vast ecosystem and it's constantly evolving.
Yeah. So based on, you know, how our customers and partners feed us and what we're seeing in the market. So what are the trends and what we should be focusing on? So that's exactly part of the focus of the product management team, to analyze all that and decide, okay, these are the systems we need. We already covered. These are systems we're adding next quarter and so on. But we're already at the point where we cover pretty much everything our customers need. And then if there's every now and then something we don't support, you know, they will help us prioritize. They will say, hey guys, it will be really cool if you can also add this system that we already have. Or just so you know, we're about to deploy this system next quarter. If you can have it about the same time or even a quarter after, it'll be great because we want to feed everything into the system. So, you know, it's really kind of a partnership with both our customers and our partners to work on that roadmap together to improve the system for everyone's for purpose of really helping everyone.
Yeah, great. No, that's, that's a tremendous effort, but super valuable. I've got a friend who's running a point of sales device, which, you know, kind of the value proposition is making offline retail as transparent as online retail. But they spent like 4 years integrating 10,000 different point of sale solutions, and going to market. Now they've got a great solution because you just plug it in and it works. But then from the deployment perspective, I guess everything is IP. So you said basically you just start deploy the software and things start popping up. Nobody at the system has to go through a catalog and say, you know, here's the checklist of all the devices that we have. So there's no kind of manual effort to determine what actually should be appearing on the system. It's just you're able to analyze the data or the kind of the system's pinging and determine what devices are what and say, like, this is a camera, this is a gateway, et cetera, you're able to automate that. Okay.
Exactly. So, you know, one of our core values in the company is simplicity. And one of, you know, the things which were important for us is that whenever we deploy, it's really straightforward for the customer. And that means, you know, just deploying the software, but also means once the software is up, then the system already kind of takes care of everything. And there's not much manual configuration from an end user perspective. So as you described, you know, we have the system knows to identify what it's kind of dealing with and serve it with the right tools that it already has within its stack.
Okay. And then if I understand correctly, kind of the way that you think about the different use cases that you can support companies with is you basically have this map of what the system is doing, right, the data and so forth, and you create profiles based on behavior. And then if something starts acting strangely, then you can identify that it might be hacked, it might be out of batteries, it might be malfunctioning. Is that kind of it, that you have basically a profile and you make predictions or assumptions about what, you know, what might be happening based on the behavior of the data?
Yes, you described it well. So we have a module which is called the Smart Alerts module, and that's exactly what it does. It takes all the data, it, you know, it slices and dices it, but then it knows automatically how to attach the right category of alert to that event, but then also at the same time decide what the severity, so how bad this is, okay, whether if it's a device that becomes unavailable, whether if it's a cybersecurity risk or anything else, but it will automatically attach both the category and the severity and then put it in front of the end user or, again, another team within the organization that they can act upon. Then, with a click of a button, they can also perform the automation. So it all works in tandem, all of the capabilities within the system.
Okay. And to what extent are humans involved? I'm just thinking of scenarios where there might be a device that's turning off every 13th day, but maybe that's supposed to happen because every 13th day somebody is, you know, going to check on a, you know, I don't know, a warehouse or something, and they turn off the electricity and turn, you know, whatever, you know, whatever might be the case. But there could be things that are kind of supposed to happen, but they're uncommon, and a wholly automated system might think that they are, a fault. So is there a need for a human in the loop, or is it just putting in enough training data that eventually you kind of work through those situations and the system, you know, start to optimize its understanding?
So where the industry is now, yes, there is still a human, which is part of that workflow. But part of the things we're talking about is, again, the journey to a fully automated system with the right controls in place, right? That the system will know, okay, this happened because of this and that, and the system will automatically, you know, do restart or upgrade firmware, things like that. Versus other cases, which will say, okay, wait, it should be okay. Let's wait. Let's give it another few minutes and see what's going on. But the industry, what we're seeing is still, most of the industry is still in that kind of manual reactive mode. So even, you know, the semi-automated mode is such a huge improvement for our customers. That mode in which you have an operator, he receives an alert, or he or she just look at the dashboard, decide what they need to do, and they perform the task automatically. That's also pretty unique in the market today. But as mentioned, again, we believe that we both us as well as our customers will be heading in the next few years is to those, you know, fully automated systems where everything, you know, happens. You still have a user which monitors every now and then, looks at the reports and stuff, but the things will happen automatically in the background.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. And right now, the human in the loop, how does that work? Is it that when you do the deployment, you have somebody kind of preemptively go in and kind of you're embedding the domain knowledge to an extent into the system by saying, here's how the process should work? Or is it when an anomaly happens or something happens, then somebody kind of checks the box and says, no, this is okay, or it seems to be a fault, and it's kind of like a learning process? How does that human engagement work?
So this is their day-to-day system, right? So this is, think about a system which is pretty much always open, you know, with some screens that are just there and they can see if anything pops up, and other screens that they enter to perform actions. But then we also have email alerts and, you know, the various collaboration capabilities that I mentioned. If they're not in the system, then they can come back online and perform and look at an alert and perform an action. As part of the deployment and onboarding, we also train them, you know, about the system. So the teams that we're working with know, they really know well the devices and all the systems, and they've been working with them for years, but now we're training them about this automated system that can do, you know, save them a lot of time and money with all the capabilities that we bring to the table.
Yeah, let's touch on that topic of money quickly. So how do you calculate the ROI? And how, maybe, you know, first of all, how clearly are you able to calculate that? So is there typically kind of a very straightforward ROI where you have a few parameters and you can kind of say, this is how much we're going to save? How clear is that typically? And then what would be often the major factors in that business case?
Yeah, so we talk about ROI, but it's actually more than just, you know, the ROI is pretty broad, and we typically like to talk about it in terms of the business outcomes that we can help our customers achieve. And we like to talk about five core business outcomes, at least, that the system provides our customers and the end users. So the first is really around system availability, right? Improving system availability. So as I mentioned earlier, you're paying so much money for these devices, for these systems every single year, and you want to make sure that they're always up and running, especially when you need them. Okay, so that's the system, improving system availability. Then there's the notion of organizational compliance. Especially now that there's more scrutiny from the IT teams, you want to know what's out there, which devices, which firmware versions, which vulnerabilities are out there on the network, and be able to deal with them. Then there's a cost reduction, you know, really cost savings, and that is, it means so many things. So less truck rollouts when there's issue with the devices, less back and forth between different teams. So between, you know, the operational teams and the IT teams and so on. And we're seeing that so much time and money is spent today on those, you know, back and forth and just trying to investigate and understand what's going on. Then also another business outcome is obviously cyber protection. And that's kind of where we started, and various capabilities which support the cyber protection capabilities in the system. And the last is the concept of future planning. So part of the challenge we've been seeing is that it's without having the level of visibility that we provide, it's hard to know even which devices you have and when, for example, they're end of life or end of support. And that's part of the capabilities that we provide, so they can better plan for the future, and you know, do device refreshes and so on.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like that business outcome, like that way of looking at the challenge, because a lot of these things are very important, but not, I mean, it can't necessarily be quantified down to a straight dollar amount. Could we walk through one deployment, if you have one in mind, just to give folks who are listening kind of a nice end-to-end perspective?
Yeah, so deployments, you know, it's the same type of challenges, same type of, you know, teams that we're serving. But think about, let's say, a university, which has many devices. So universities, you know, in the States, it's like, it's a city pretty much. And they have many devices which are scattered all over the campus for purpose of safety. Of the students and faculty, and so on. And it can be video surveillance, it can be access control, it can be intercoms in different areas. And that, you know, is a typical use case. And by the way, it's the same use case that we're dealing with in different types of organizations, whether it's in tech or in healthcare or in other organizations. But the use case will be, okay, how do we help, you know, the customer best make use of those technology and make sure that, you know, those technologies that he purchased for campus safety always up, running, and available, and in the right way and in a timely fashion. So that's where we, you know, the system will monitor all the devices, make sure they're working. If there's any issues, it will alert the end user. Then it will provide them the capabilities to perform, you know, the automation and to fix those devices if possible from afar. So remotely fixing the devices is a big thing with the system. And if needed, it will tell them, okay, you know, you actually need to refresh these devices. So you should think about replacing them because these devices have been out there in the field for years. And by the way, they're also end of life. And this use case is a pretty typical use case that we're seeing across our install base.
Okay, gotcha. And if we use that as an example, what is the sales model look like? Is it like platform plus, you know, monthly fee per device or database? Or how do you... Because I guess you're scaling up from quite small customers all the way to large conglomerates.
Yeah, so it's we also try to keep it simple there, right? So it's a SaaS model. So tiers of devices per year. Pretty straightforward, very, very simple.
Okay, gotcha. So you basically look at how many devices a company has and you say you fall in tier 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and then have a model based around that.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. Great. Roy, I think we've gotten a good perspective on the business here. Anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to cover?
No, I think this was a good chat, and hopefully this provided you know, enough information about what we do, and this was helpful for the audience.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thanks. And then I guess last question for me is, how can folks get in touch with your colleagues if they'd like to learn more?
So there's quite a bit of information on our website, so www.securethings.com. So website, LinkedIn page, and you know, reach out, and we're happy to work with. We'll be happy to work with you.
Awesome. Well, we'll get that in the show notes, and thanks again, Roy, for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Eric. Have a good one.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. If you have unique insight or a project deployment story to share, we'd love to feature you on a future edition. Write us at eric.walenza@IoT1.com.